In the following episode, Justin and I answer more listener questions. As you will hear, a recurring theme is that in order to make the most of your royalties, you need to know what you own, where they are located, and when nearby oil and gas activity is expected to occur. Which brings me to the sponsor of this episode. I'd like to tell you about a free app that I've been using from Enverus Energy Link called Mineral IQ. Mineral IQ enables you to view monthly income, track earnings trends, and download pay stubs. It also provides in-depth valuation information you can use to make confident decisions when to sell or what to buy. It even tracks surrounding rig and permit activity and provides you with that data on a weekly basis. One Mineral IQ user said, "I had just inherited some income on a well, and Mineral IQ's appraisal feature gave me the confidence to hold on to my interest instead of selling it at the wrong price." If you aren't already signed up, be sure to visit www.mineraliq.com today to get started. Again, that's mineraliq.com to get started for free today.
Are you ready to make the most of your oil and gas mineral rights? Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. Get the knowledge and resources you need to manage your minerals and royalties. Here is your host, Matt Sands.
Hello and welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sands, and I'm here to help you make the most of your mineral rights and royalties. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Justin Williams. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
Good morning, Matt. Doing good. Episode number 200. How crazy is that?
200. That is nuts. So we're celebrating our 200th episode. It really flown by, and I want to give a lot of thanks to you for that. You know, you've really been a key factor, I think, in this thing going on as long as it has so far. So first of all, thank you for your help in showing up every week and contributing and really providing a lot of value for our listeners.
Absolutely. And thank you, Matt, to all the hard work you put in to get the shows ready. I don't think people realize how much research you do to get our show notes ready. And I've learned a ton from you, and I hope all of our listeners have learned a ton as well. It's been a heck of a journey. And I think having this podcast every week may be one of the more stable things in my life over the last couple of years. Having a new baby and everything, it's kind of my rock.
Nice. Yeah, I know. I can relate. Yeah, it's definitely the thing that we can count on every week. You know, rain or shine, no matter what's happening in the world, we try to be here for you all. And so to celebrate that, what I wanted to do was really celebrate you, the listener. And what we're going to do today is a Q&A episode, but it's a slightly different Q&A episode, where we're focusing on the questions related to investing in minerals and royalties. And I've been getting a lot of emails and calls from listeners, especially over the past month or so, wanting to get into investing in minerals and royalties, wanting to learn more about either their investment thesis and testing it and saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Am I on the right track? Some people that are in the oil and gas industry that are familiar with the fundamental concepts around putting value on properties and underwriting and things like that, but they want to start a mineral buying company and maybe they've worked on the operator side of things and they want to switch gears a little bit, or I've had people that are real estate investors that want to transition over or add mineral investments to their portfolio. Whatever the background, I think there's more and more interest in this asset class, Justin.
You nailed it, Matt. And you know, a year ago, we were talking a lot about how inheriting mineral rights was the main way that people got minerals. And I think that's still true. But to your point, there seems to be more people who have never done this before. Maybe they don't own mineral rights, and they're really wanting to get into this. And kudos to people for taking a bite off of something that's highly complex. And it's just a matter of learning. And some of the questions we have today, Matt, were really interesting questions from an investor standpoint. And I'm excited to get into them.
Yeah, I am excited too. And I think that you made a good point that it's all about learning. And so that's what we try to do on this show, is teach you what you need to know to manage your minerals and royalties, or if you don't own minerals and royalties yet, to begin that journey of investing in minerals and royalties and then knowing how to properly manage them. So similar to a lot of other episodes, we want to try to provide a lot of actionable information here in this episode. Of course, just a disclaimer before we dive into this, you know, this is not investment advice. We're not giving you advice on any specific investment, nor are we advocating for or against investing in minerals and royalties. This is really just intended to be for informational purposes only, so that you can make an informed decision if it makes sense for you. Obviously, everyone's situation is different. You need to talk with your financial advisors, your attorneys, CPAs, to figure out if this might be a good investment for your particular situation. But, you know, the interesting thing with minerals and royalties, Justin, before we dive in, is that it can be big or small. There's mineral deals that are only a few hundred dollars to several million dollars. So it really just depends on the size of the deal. So it's certainly something where people can get started with a little bit of sweat equity, willing to put in some elbow grease, and you don't have to have a ton of money to get started. But it is something where you need to know what you're doing. Otherwise, you are going to get the short end of the stick. We had Jimmy Wright on a few months ago. He had a great saying that I think is worth repeating here, that minerals and royalties is the only situation where it's seller beware. So you hear about seller beware from the situation if you're an owner of minerals and royalties and you're approached to buy those, you're obviously, there's a reason for that and they probably know more than you do. And so you need to arm yourself with the knowledge to level the playing field. And I'll say in this case, it's sort of the other side. It's more the caveat emptor, the buyer beware, and you need to be able to do the due diligence. You need to be able to know what makes a good investment versus a bad investment, which actually brings us to the first question here. Justin, do you want to go ahead and dive into that?
Absolutely. So the first question we have here is from Ken. He says, I thought I'd reach out because I've been approached with a mineral rights offering, and I want to know what your thoughts are regarding starting into the mineral rights investing space. Is it something that a new investor should consider, or maybe look at other options due to the green energy movement? And Matt, I think this is a really common question for people either thinking to invest or even mineral right owners. You know, is this something that is worth doing over the next 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer is yes, it is something that's going to be around. We are very dependent on fossil fuels. And I don't see that changing for the foreseeable future, certainly not in my lifetime, and probably not in my kids' lifetime. I think partially because we need it for every aspect of life. And wind and solar is great, but it's not reliable. It's intermittent. We don't have the battery technology, nor are there enough rare earth metals to scale up to build enough batteries to fully replace, you know, the thermal power plants and things like that. So we have to be looking at a mix of everything, I think. It needs to be nuclear power, it needs to be geothermal, it needs to be oil and gas, and then also wind and solar. But I think it is foolish to think that we're just going to flip a switch and by 2030, I'll be driving electric cars powered by wind turbines and solar panels. That's not a realistic, it's really not even possible physically. So I think that when we think about investing, oil and gas is going to be around for a while. And I think that we have a structural undersupply situation that we're getting into, that because of this political rhetoric and things around the green energy movement, that we haven't been investing as much into fossil fuels. And at the same time, the world is growing. You know, the energy needs of the developing world is certainly growing by leaps and bounds, and we're going to need to meet those needs with something. And I think oil and gas being the lowest cost option, and coal for that matter, is going to be a big part of the equation for the foreseeable future. So again, I don't have a crystal ball. I could be wrong on these things I'm talking about today, but I do have a firm belief that we are going to be relying on oil and gas for a while. And as a result, if you're going to be looking at investing in minerals and royalties, and certainly producing wells, Justin, if you're worried a little bit about things maybe slowing down as far as new drilling, you know, if you buy a producing well, they're going to keep producing that until it's not economic to do so. So that's something where you could hedge your bet a little bit depending on the type of asset that you buy, right?
Absolutely, Matt. And you know, something that isn't talked about a lot, but really makes mineral rights so attractive is that it's a real property type. It's something that the ownership's perpetual. And in general, it's something that you can pass on. And to disclaim that, some states have dormant mineral statutes where you might need to periodically file a notice to affirm your ownership. But Matt, it is a real property type, like real estate, like buying a property, and that makes it a very attractive.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we talk a little bit more about that dormant mineral rights concept in episode 66. So there are some cases where the minerals will revert back to the surface owner, and it's a few states you need to really be aware of. So that may be not a great place to start investing if you're going to be looking at needing to do things, or maybe if it is passed down to heirs and they forget to do it, then it could go back to the surface owner. So probably a good idea to not invest in those states, at least to begin with, until you really get up and running. But that is something to be aware of. And then episode 26 was one of the first episodes we talked about considerations with investing in minerals and royalties as an asset class. And maybe we can recap a few of the high points, Justin. What are some of the benefits of investing in minerals and royalties?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the pros are ownership of the real estate under the surface of the earth. It is a real property type again. Tax advantages, you know, there's depletion deduction. They're selling an asset may fall into long-term capital gains, but that depletion deduction is something that is very valuable to mineral owners. It can deliver good returns if you buy at the right price and if wells are either drilled soon afterwards, or if you're buying producing minerals and that production continues at the rates you expect. Unleased minerals can provide cash payments in terms of lease bonus before the wells are even drilled. You can earn some income. And if the lease expires, you might be able to lease that property again. New formations and technologies, they're constantly changing. And after a producing formation is depleted, another deeper formation might be found to be economic, Matt. And that's something that over the history of oil and gas, we go deeper and deeper and deeper into new formations.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we haven't even scratched the surface on enhanced oil recovery on these shale formations. So if that is something that becomes possible to do, then that could be a whole nother resurgence of these wells that have been previously drilled that have a whole new extension of life and additional production that'll come from that. So there's that. And then I think the other thing too, speaking of leasing, we have some open minerals, in other words, unleased minerals, and we leased them, probably 5 years ago. The lease recently expired last year. We're in the process of releasing those again. So we're even just with the process of leasing those. The lease bonus, when we first leased it, paid for that initial investment. Now we're leasing it again. That's going to be another additional bump. And then they are going to be hopefully drilling some wells soon. And when those wells start producing and we start getting paid royalties, that is just a whole nother additional benefit. So, you know, when you look at investing in unleased minerals, obviously they have to be in a good area. You can buy unleased minerals in what is affectionately known as goat pasture in the industry, where there's nothing that's going to happen besides a goat that's going to be eating the grass on the surface. There's not going to be any drilling anytime soon. And that's not a good investment if you're looking at wanting to continue this process of buying a property, getting the return on your initial investment, and then reinvesting that cash flow that's generated into new properties. So that's something where you can start to get this cycle going, where you can reinvest some of those royalties into new properties over time. So you have to be buying in the right areas though. But on the other hand, there are some definite things to be aware of with minerals and royalties. First of all, because you aren't in control of when a well gets drilled, you're sort of at the mercy of when that oil or gas company comes in and drills that well. And there's also the risk that a well would never get drilled. And so if you're this, again, passive owner, you have this interest, you can help influence it to the extent that you are friendly in dealing with the oil and gas company. If you have surface rights, maybe you can work with them to sign a surface use agreement to attract them to come and drill from your property, you know, build the well pad there and, you know, do what you can in terms of negotiating a lease that's favorable to you, but then also not overly cumbersome for the operator. So they're going to want to come in and it's going to be economic for them to drill a well. So, you know, that's the one drawback for minerals and royalties, is there's a bit of the passive nature to it. And then you're kind of at the mercy of when development happens. You can buy in certain areas, which you think would have a well drilled on it soon, but you've got to be strategic about that for sure. And the next thing is you're at the whim of the markets, right? Justin, commodity prices can go up and down. Even since we've started recording the show, how many downturns have we seen? It's been, what, maybe two?
Yeah, absolutely. We're all just glad it's not negative still, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when oil went negative, that was the first time in history that's happened. But, you know, crazier things have happened in the world. So I think you've got to be aware and be ready to ride those ups and downs of commodity prices. And that means when you go to buy, you know, don't be underwriting the deal at $80 or $90 oil. If you're a buy and hold investor, think about what the average oil price is going to be over the life of that investment and make sure that you don't estimate the prices higher than that when you're running economics, so that even if the price goes down, you end up making money over the long term. What are some of the other things you have to be aware of, Justin?
So you have to be a sophisticated investor, and you really have to know what you're getting into. You know, minerals isn't for everyone. And with investing in mineral rights, there comes a need to understand what's the right geology, who are good and bad operators that'll be around for a while to drill out the acreage. And it's just a highly technical area that you really have to be ready to be able to get in there, learn the industry, and kind of figure out what's going on. On top of that, it can be pretty complicated to invest directly on your own, finding deals, doing proper due diligence, from either looking at the land and the title side to running economics on oil price and the production. You just have to know what you're doing. And if you're new to this, even working with experts, Matt, you have to have a level of understanding that allows you to be able to effectively work with those experts. And I think that's something that it's a learning curve. It takes a while. You also should have that trusted team of advisors. Even if you are a geologist or an engineer or whatever else it is, there's the other highly complex aspects, whether it's the accounting and tax side of it, whether it's the legal side of it. You really need to know who your team is going to be and who you can rely on. Unfortunately, it's not just as easy as picking up the phone and calling any attorney. They need to be somebody who's familiar with oil and gas. I said, from the investor standpoint, you really need to know, what is it worth? I think that's the most important thing. And that is a simple question for sometimes a very difficult answer.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, to your earlier point on working with any old attorney, a lot of times, even if they are an oil and gas attorney, they may have a conflict of interest. Maybe they're working for an operator in the area, and so they can't work with you as an investor buying interest, and, you know, when they have an existing relationship with a client. So it's sometimes tricky to find a good oil and gas attorney that is able to work with mineral and royalty owners. And so that's definitely something where you need to build that network of people. Obviously going to industry events, networking events, whether it's on the minerals and royalties investing side or through NARO and meeting other investors. A lot of landmen, attorneys, CPAs go to NARO events, and petroleum engineers. So if you need to build that team of advisors, going to NARO events can be a good way to network with other folks that are service providers in the industry. And, you know, like Justin said, you have to know enough to be dangerous. You have to know enough to know what questions you need to ask to your landman when you run title, that when you get the mineral ownership report back, that you understand what you're looking at and you understand what steps you need to take. Oftentimes, these are the steps that you need to go through to clear up title, or, hey, everything looks good. This is how much this owner has in this tract. I think getting some coaching from somebody that's been through it before to help hold your hand through your first couple of deals. You know, if you're working in sales, you're great at going and reaching out, calling people, writing letters. That can be a superpower in the minerals and royalties game. They call it doing the ground game. That's basically knocking on doors, making phone calls, finding the mineral and royalty owners and contacting them to see if they're interested in selling. And then once you have somebody who is potentially interested, then you need to work, if you don't know how to run economics on your own, get somebody to run the numbers so you can understand what it's worth, and then understand the next steps. How do you get it under contract? How do you do the due diligence? How do you close? And then once you've closed and you own those minerals, how do you get it in pay status with the operator if they're producing wells? And then, you know, the royalty checks, taking a look at those. So there's all sorts of these things that once you're getting started, having somebody that you can call and say, hey, I've got this question about this royalty statement. Why do I have all these negative numbers that are showing up each month from a year ago? What's going on here? And then somebody can explain the prior period adjustment process and why those things are showing up and what to look for and things like that. So like Justin said, having that team of advisors on call to get help when you need it, and then knowing sort of the high level stuff that you need to be doing to close these deals. And so there's a lot to learn. There's a steep learning curve, but it's definitely doable. I've coached several mineral investors through the process of what do you need to be doing, helping them understand the economics, what the property's worth, and then, you know, they've successfully purchased properties on their own. So that's definitely something you can do if you're persistent and if it's something you really want to learn. And it's fun. It's really a interesting industry. Every deal is different. You know, it's a cool place to be.
Absolutely, Matt. And as with any investment, you need to have enough funds to be able to lose everything, you know, without causing you to go broke. Minerals are one of those things that a buy and hold is often what you see. Doing a buy and flip with minerals, it really, especially if you're new to it, can put you in the situation to get caught holding the bag. It's something that typically oil and gas development has a pretty long time frame. It's not something that's going to happen in 30 days. And that's something to keep in mind as well, because if you're looking for that quick buck, minerals might not be the best place to get that.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme, that is for sure. And the people that claim that it is, you should run as fast as you can from those deals. And so that's the final sort of cautionary tale, is the other con are the cons. In other words, the people who are out there soliciting investments in wells that they say they're going to drill and they promise really spectacular returns that seem too good to be true, or even mineral deals. There's a reason that they're out there trying to flip this, because they're looking to make money on that, right? And so there's not a reason that you can't work with somebody if they have a deal. But typically, if you're getting cold calls on unsolicited offers to invest, it's sometimes questionable as to the integrity of those investments and whether or not they're really that good of an investment. There's a saying that I like that is, don't trust, verify. And so you're putting a lot of trust in these people that are calling you saying, hey, yeah, this is great. You really need to be doing the due diligence on your own and finding mineral investments that you can buy without having somebody having marketed that to you. You know, you're in control of the process, and I'm really more in favor of being in control of that process than being at the mercy of somebody who's trying to potentially swindle you. So anyway, that was a long answer, Ken, to your question. But as a new investor, there is definitely some consideration that can be given to investing in minerals and royalties. If you're willing to put in the work, it can be a great investment.
You nailed it, Matt. And on that note, we'll go into one of our questions here, which is from Mike. Mike says, I'm a private investor, recently bought 60 acres of mineral rights in Dawson County, right next to where EOG is drilling. I don't know if it was a good deal or not, but I think it was. My number one is to be able to find good deals and to recognize what a good deal is. And Matt, this is oh so common. I think that's one of the most difficult things starting out, is you can look at the data, but interpreting that data and knowing whether it is a good or bad deal can be a little bit difficult. And Mike sent over some information in a PDF file, which is called a teaser presentation. In other words, it's just a sales presentation. That's a map of the interest showing nearby producing and permitted wells, performance of offset wells, so on, so thing. Some of the things it mentions is the operator, the offer price, producing wells and current royalties, and then expected net revenue for each well, Matt. And these are the basic information you're going to see, but do you want to talk about what would or wouldn't make those good metrics?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that if you look at the operator, that's a good place to start. If you're looking for recognizing what a good deal is, you're going to want to look for a trustworthy operator, an operator who has a track record of actually executing and drilling wells like they say they're going to do. So if you think of the large major oil and gas companies, larger independents, and so you want to understand the area in which you're investing first, understand who the players are, what their track record has been. Are they good as far as their environmental track record? You know, there's been one operator in Colorado recently that's been in the headlines because they are getting shut down and potentially losing their license to operate in Colorado because they have failed to comply with the oil and gas regulations here. So similarly, you want to look at, are there sort of those operators that are cutting corners, that are not doing things with a long-term view, or are there ones that are saying that they're going to spend so much capital, and they do, and they have good performing wells, if they actually end up getting drilled, that are going to pay you good royalties. So you want somebody that's going to come in and you want to be buying minerals under a decent operator. Sometimes you don't have control over that, especially if there are wells that aren't permitted yet. You know, you're sort of at the mercy. Those leases can get traded a couple of times before a well gets drilled. But to the extent that you have the ability to buy minerals that are maybe producing with a good operator, or if there are permitted wells with a certain operator, then that would be something to look for. And then I think the other thing, Justin, is, you know, looking at where the activity is. And if you're buying in an area that's near or next to or in an area where they're drilling a lot of wells, that's what you want to look for. That is going to mean that you're going to get a return on your investment in a shorter period of time than if you're buying at the fringes. Now, there can be benefit to buying at the fringes of a good oil and gas play if the geology is good and you believe that they're going to be moving in your direction at some point, because you can buy it at a lower price per acre. If you think about over the life cycle of a property, you know, the lowest price is going to be when there's no oil and gas lease, there's not a lot of drilling around. And so you're sort of speculating a little bit that they're going to come in and drill. And the price sort of creeps up the closer they get to drilling, to where they actually complete the wells and they start producing. So that's kind of the peak of the value curve, so to speak. So if you think about where you want to come in on that value curve, you want to be close as you can to when they drill those wells, but pay as low as low a price as possible, right? And so that's the trade-off balance that you have to weigh. Or you have to have a diverse portfolio across multiple tracks and multiple areas, multiple levels of maturity, to where you're buying some of those deals that are unleased and then you're buying some current production and those types of things. So you can kind of play around with that. And that kind of goes to thinking about what type of an investment that you want to make. You know, is this more of a speculative investment, or is this more where you want to invest under producing wells, where it's like buying an annuity? It's more of a steady income stream. So there's that mix of things you need to think about. And when you're first getting started, especially when you're not really sure, trying to figure out the operators, trying to figure out an area, I tend to lean towards maybe buying more producing minerals so that you have a history of production that you can pretty easily forecast into the future. You can then, you're just really playing with what are the commodity prices going to do, and am I being conservative in my well forecast? And then from there, you know, it's like buying an annuity sort of. So it's not a super sexy investment, so to speak, but it's very stable as you can get within the minerals and royalties. But then in the meantime, you can maybe play with some of those more speculative investments. So good, when you say how to recognize what a good deal is, it just depends. I think focusing on one area to start with is good, and you'll start to get a feel for what the good investments are, what the bad investments are. I always recommend for people getting started to go on EnergyNet and just watch and see what type of deals are marketed, what they sell for. So you can start to look at the auctions and start seeing what these properties are selling for, and then run the numbers on your side and kind of go through a dry run. What if I were to buy this? This is what I would offer. Where does it actually sell? Was that a good deal? Would I have made my money back or no? And then you can start to understand what the market is like and differences between producing minerals versus open minerals that are unleased. And then you can start to build your own investment thesis based on your objectives. So at the end of the day, a lot to learn, but there's a lot of resources out there if you're patient to learn about that.
You nailed it, man. And, you know, commodity prices are always something to think about when you're looking at deals like this. Obviously, as a seller, you're going to want to try to use a price that looks attractive to the buyers. However, you've got to trust yourself and your research into what you think commodity prices will be over time, especially if you're a buy and hold investor. Those commodity prices really can make or break whether it's an economic well. So that's something to certainly think about.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to go to the next one?
Let's do it. So the next one here is from Garrett. I'm buying a small mineral interest. I'm looking for a spreadsheet or a free service to keep track of taxes, paychecks, etc. And Matt, again, this is another super common question. At one time, there were no good ways. Now it seems like there's too many good ways sometimes.
That's right. That is something that once you do get your first property and you start getting paid royalties, you need to make sure that you're staying on top of that. You're making sure that you're getting paid correctly, right? So there are ways to do that on your own. We did an episode on how to do a quick end of the year royalty audit. Typically, like other investments, you'll get a 1099 at the end of the year if you have a certain amount of income. And you need to check to make sure that those numbers that are reported to the IRS are correct. And in episode 97, where we talk about how to audit your oil and gas royalty statements. And so that is something that is important when you think about doing a quick end of the year audit to make sure that you're getting paid correctly. And then for the longer term stuff, making sure that the production volumes match what's reported to the state versus what's on your pay stub, and then the prices as well. And there's all sorts of information we have out there on post-production cost, which is episode 72, which is something where they subtract the cost of getting gas to market. And there's a whole episode we did on that. Again, episode 97 on how to audit your oil and gas royalty statements. And then we dive even deeper on how to read and manage your royalty statements on episode 166. So once you start getting paid, there are a lot of resources out there to figure that out. But in terms of tools, Garrett, we're preferential to Mineral IQ. Disclaimer, they are a sponsor of this show. But I think they provide a great service as far as automating that process of auditing your royalty statements. You know, they'll flag if there's something that is amiss. You can look at the tip of your fingers and see what the production was from those wells and then what was reported on your check. And so it definitely is a step in the right direction. They have a free version that you can get started with. And then they just recently released Mineral IQ Plus, which is a paid version, and it has a little bit more in depth on the appraisal feature and things like that. So that's something that's a useful resource. I've been impressed with the functionality and, you know, just as that has been evolving over the past year or so. And again, just a disclaimer, they are a sponsor of the show. There are other tools out there, other mineral management or royalty management software that is typically quite a bit more expensive, you know, several hundred dollars a month. So if you do have a significant portfolio, then there's more complex or more sophisticated tools out there that you can use. And then from a tax standpoint, that kind of boils down to keeping track of those 1099s, keeping track of the severance tax information that you get from the operators, and then working with the CPA to help you file what you need to do in each state. So that's the thing that you're going to have to do, is if you're getting taxes in Oklahoma and Colorado, for example, you're going to need to file a return in Oklahoma as well for those royalties you receive there, and making sure that you're reporting the severance taxes that were paid, et cetera. Oftentimes, you'll get a refund back because it's below a certain amount, but you still have to file taxes. And that's where a CPA can come in handy to make sure you're doing everything you need to and that you're taking advantage of the depletion deduction that Justin mentioned, which is generally a 15% deduction off of your gross royalties for that year. So that's a nice way to basically take advantage of the nature of the depleting asset that we have. It's like depreciation for other capital assets. Well, with oil and gas wells, they're depleting. They're constantly decreasing in production rates over time. And so to give you a benefit like depreciation, they have the depletion deduction, which is the equivalent of that for oil and gas and minerals and royalties. And so those are a couple of different things to keep in mind. And then the other thing too is if you have minerals, then you're going to be needing to pay property taxes potentially. If you don't pay property taxes, there's a chance that the property can get sold at a tax auction and you can lose it. And then also in Texas, there's a unique situation where you don't pay taxes until it starts producing royalties. But when it does, you need to make sure you pay those property tax bills. And in fact, I just recently ran into a situation where we bought some royalties a few years ago, and the appraisal district never changed ownership. So it was still showing up as the previous owner. I was going on the appraisal district website to look for our tax statements each year, and I never saw anything. So mistakenly thought maybe there's some exception here in this county. They handle it different with this operator. Well, now just sitting there with the previous owner. And then when they finally got to the certain level, certain period of time, then it got escalated up to the attorney to try to collect on it. And so now we're in the process of clearing that up. So that's something you don't want to wait, because then you're paying penalties and fees on top of taxes that you're going to owe anyway. So, you know, definitely want to be aware of the tax situation in the jurisdiction where you're investing to make sure you stay on top of the property taxes that are due as well. So good luck, Garrett.
Yep, absolutely, ma'am. And, you know, if you don't like dealing with the DMV, you're probably not going to like dealing with the county assessor. It can be quite a challenge. In my experience, they are as willing to work with you as they can, but they're dealing with massive amounts of information at that. So our next one here, ma'am, is from a listener. It says, I invested in a small amount of World War interest in West Texas in 2015, and it turned out to be not too profitable. Didn't even know what I did wrong to cause such an outcome. Anyways, after the pandemic, I decided to move this investment further. I don't know when we can have some corporations.
Maybe he's corporations. So this is a listener from Beijing, China. So shout out to all of our international listeners. This was amazing. But yeah, if you're interested in investing and, you know, obviously maybe it's not something where you have to be physically located in the United States. I had a listener that went through my initial boot camp of the Mineral Management Basics course who works in the oil and gas industry. He works in Abu Dhabi and he was interested in learning about investing. And so this is amazing. So yeah, sorry, Justin, you can keep reading, but that's partially why I think that English is not his first language.
Yeah, no, completely agree, man. And it makes sense. You know, it sounds like he was trying to invest in some wells in West Texas, probably was still learning about the economics and how the oil and gas industry works. And was hoping, Matt, to get some understanding from you on maybe what he did wrong or what he could be looking at going forward. And again, another really common question.
Yeah, it's a very common question. In fact, we were talking before we hit record that I've had two meetings in the past 2 weeks with listeners that are starting their investment journey, needed some coaching, you know, one-on-one coaching. And so that was great to connect with them. So definitely if you need some help, want to bounce an idea off of somebody, that partially what we do here is just with the education content, also on the investing side. So if you want some assistance with getting an evaluation with how to underwrite these deals, that's something that I can help with as well. So first of all, thanks for your email from Beijing. That's awesome. You know, hopefully we can connect and there's a 13-hour time difference like he mentions in this email. So hopefully there'll be a time where we can talk at some point in the future. But it's something that, again, you don't have to be alone in trying to figure this all out, Justin. Like you mentioned, there's a lot to learn. That's something where it's good to connect with a mentor to help you understand what your goals are and then understand what type of properties and the process you need to internally get to the point of landing on your investment thesis and landing on, okay, these are the types of properties in, that I'm going to invest in this area, and this is how I'm going to find them. And so that's all stuff that having somebody you can talk through that process and can help reassure you that you're on the right track and reaching your goals. But in any case, like Justin said, it's just really that learning curve and getting the basics around what are the different types of properties, how do I go about looking at what the oil and gas activity is nearby, how do I run title? You know, if you're getting started, I always recommend at least on the first property, running title on your own just to understand the process. You can always hire a landman to help review it to make sure you didn't miss anything. But all those things we're going to cover in the Mineral Management Basics course when it launches here in a couple of months. So definitely stay tuned. Make sure you're on my email list so that you're notified when that's available. That's at mineralrightspodcast.com. And just join the newsletter there to make sure you're notified as soon as that goes live. So just putting the finishing touches on that right now. And I'm excited to get that out there so people can take advantage of it. But in the meantime, if you need some more personalized help, if you prefer to work one-on-one, you can shoot me an email at feedback@mineralrightspodcast.com because I also work with clients on an hourly basis. So if you need some help in getting started, just to reach out.
Absolutely. And the perfect time, Matt, to be reflecting. He's invested in the deal. He's wondering what he did or did not do that he should have. And so this is perfect time to kind of work with somebody and learn about what that investment was like. Our next one here from Sam. I'm interested in learning more about investing in mineral rights. He inherited 20% ownership of royalties from gas wells on her family ranch on the border of Utah and Wyoming. He'd like to learn more and get a better understanding of mineral rights and then also to expand and buy more royalties. And Matt, again, this is a thought that I've had. I inherited mineral rights. You know, it's certainly something that a lot of people want to expand. And it's a great way to take the knowledge that you already need to have about managing your minerals and grow that into buying more.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When you think about you're getting a current stream of income and to the extent that, you know, that is discretionary income that you could go and reinvest in another property. Like we were talking before the show again, Justin, I think that the macroeconomic environment and the stock market uncertainty and all this stuff you're reading in the newspaper, you know, is the U.S. going to default, you know, on sovereign debt? Do I want to go and buy treasuries in case that happens? Or, you know, the market is definitely not the same as it was 3 years ago, where you could invest in almost any company and it's going to make a positive return and the market was just going up, and now it's a lot more difficult to make a positive return on your investment. And so people are thinking about that, I think, and if they want to deploy capital and preserve that capital, they're looking at real assets. In times of high inflation, you hear about buying real property, investing in gold, things like that, that are going to hold value. And so minerals and royalties, my thought is that's probably why a lot more people are thinking about that. And certainly if you're getting royalties today, you're familiar with that asset, you have a leg up on some people. You already know how to read your royalties checks, and you know how to get things switched over to your name and go through probate because you've gone through that process when you inherited those. And now it's like, how do I expand it? I have the basic knowledge. I just need to understand, how do I put value on it? And I know what area, maybe I want to buy more minerals in my area, which I'm familiar with from my experience managing my current royalties. So that's a great way to do that, just kind of bolt on acquisitions in that current area where you already have knowledge of the operators and you're talking to your neighbors. And maybe that's something where you know people already in that area. You're living in that town, you're talking to them, you know, hear somebody saying, hey, I'm thinking about selling my mineral rights, and you could work with them to make them an offer and potentially, you know, leverage your existing network to expand your portfolio.
Absolutely, Matt. And our next one here is from Sean. He mentions the episode that we did on nuclear energy investment, and that it seems like it might be a good option given the current geopolitical climate. He also goes on to say that he's a Floridian who knows nothing about the oil and gas space. A family member talked him into investing into a royalty trust that has some near-term litigation risk. And his initial investment was $30,000 made in July. It is now appreciated $50,000. And the monthly royalties are obviously a very attractive given the valuation. It goes on, Matt, to kind of talk about the deal a little bit more. And he ends it with saying that, I realize I don't have a ton invested, but I hate being uneducated. Do you see value in retaining a consultant on something like this? Or is it something that he can research on his own? And he mentions that he's read a number of SEC filings as well.
Yeah, and this is a different way of investing in minerals and royalties. So we've been talking throughout the episode about directly investing in minerals and royalties, where you actually take title to the property and to the minerals, and you're getting that real property. And there's other investment vehicles that are out there. There are royalty trusts that are something that you can invest in through like a brokerage account or something like that, or there are publicly traded mineral companies. Certainly there are other options as well. So that's another thing that's out there, maybe is another way to get exposure to this without having to go through the process of the learning curve initially. And this Hugoton Royalty Trust he mentions in here, which I was not really that familiar with prior to his email. I think just in general, you know, some of those things, if there are questions in your mind, and this is kind of what I told Sean and when I responded to his email, is if the investment has gone up, and in this case, it's at the time of his email, it had gone up by over like 67% from the initial investment. So you're sitting at a pretty significant return. If there is, in this case, there was like a legal judgment or something that was going to take a hit on the monthly royalty payments for time period, and he wanted to know, should I think about holding on to this for the long term, or am I better off taking the money and running? And I can't give you specific advice in this case, but you know, just in general, I'll say if you're uncertain about an investment and there are red flags or questions or things that are potentially going to negatively impact that investment and it's up 67%, you know, that seems like a decision to make that, well, maybe I ought to take my money and reinvest that. And maybe I like this asset class, but maybe there's a different way to invest that, whether it's through a different company or through directly investing in minerals and royalties and taking that appreciated investment and then rolling that over into another investment. Now, the one thing, this being in a brokerage account, hopefully, you know, if you've held on to it for longer than a year, there's tax considerations also. So if you, maybe it's a short-term capital gain situation or short-term investment versus long-term capital gains, and that's a consideration as well. Do you hold on to it at least until you meet that threshold of meeting long-term capital gains and then getting out of it? That's something to think about and understanding where you are in that year holding period before it triggers the long-term capital gains. But then, you know, if you buy minerals and royalties and you want to sell a property, you want to reinvest it into another one, there's the option to do a 1031 exchange. So that's something that you can consider with minerals and royalties, being that it's real property that would qualify for that. Or that if you've bought minerals and royalties and at some point in the future, you want to get out of that and buy an investment property, like an apartment or, you know, whatever, that is something that you can work with your tax consultants and your attorneys and get with a qualified intermediary to help you facilitate that transaction. And so that's something to think about when you invest directly in minerals and royalties. You open up these tax deferment strategies that if you're just investing through your brokerage account into a mineral and royalty company, maybe you don't get as much of that tax benefit. So obviously not tax advice, you need to do your own research, get help from your CPA, but some interesting things to think about when investing in minerals and royalties for sure. But there are definitely multiple ways to go about it.
Absolutely, Matt. And it doesn't seem to be terribly often we hear about these royalty funds, but they're abundant and they've been around for many, many years. Again, just a different angle to invest from.
So yeah, that was the last question. There is a resource I found that talks a little bit about valuation methodologies in the oil and gas industry. And it talks about the ways that you think about, like if you're investing in an E&P company or investing in a company, even a mineral company that's publicly traded, they'll have reserve reports and reserve valuations. And so you can look at the value of the company based on the fair market value of its oil and gas reserves. In other words, the oil and gas that's under the ground that they haven't tapped into yet. And so there's some things that this article will talk about on, you know, how do you value exploration and production companies? And I think you could extend some of this to how to evaluate mineral and royalty companies as well, if you want to go with the publicly traded option. So you can find that in the show notes, which is always, you can be found at mineralrightspodcast.com. So yeah, that wraps up this episode. Thanks again for listening. Happy 200 episodes, Justin, and look forward to the next 200.
Absolutely. We'll talk about 201 next week.
That's right. So until then, have a good week and we'll talk to you then. Thanks again for listening. Thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much for listening to the Mineral Rights Podcast with your host, Matt Sands. Don't forget to subscribe and share at mineralrightspodcast.com. The Mineral Rights Podcast should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy.